get a coin with the king's head on the back. I understood they're just sort of, they're coming out gradually. Is anyone? What about you, Lynn?
I think I've had one, yeah.
Stamp? Anyone yet?
Christmas.
Yeah? It's slow going, isn't it? Considering we've still got post boxes that have Queen Victoria's cipher on them, I don't think anyone was expecting a change overnight. But we've got this very slow process of replacing our notes, our coins, our stamps, and other things that are changing slowly as we mark the transition between the Queen, who, let's face it, had 70 years of us putting her head, her cipher on everything. And now Charles has been king for 15 months, 16 months-ish. And he's not made a massively quick start. Like, I think if I was thinking this, I'd be going around sticking my head everywhere. I'd be wanting people not to be like under any mistake that I was in charge now. But it is a bit of a slow process. I didn't understand quite how long it would take someone to draw an outline of the side of his head. It seemed to be months before they showed us what this was going to be like. But it will happen over time, that gradually, it's not something we notice just happening like that. Gradually over time, we see more and more places where we're used to maybe seeing the head of the Queen or the crown or some kind of cipher there. And we now see a picture of the king. It is in some ways very much like a changing of the guard as one thing turns in to another. And here in this passage that Vicky read to us from Ephesians chapter 3, we are seeing a message from Paul, who is writing to the church in Ephesus. Remember, this is a really early church. This is a church trying to get what the basics of being followers of Jesus are like, is all about. And what Paul writes is, it is about putting Jesus as their king. It is about putting that picture up there and saying, do you know what? In the past, we've done things in our way. We've had our own things that have been in charge. And now, Paul, throughout the book of Ephesians, is saying now Christ is first. And that is sometimes easy to forget when we think as ourselves as a Christian church. We think, well, of course, we're about putting Christ first. But for these people, this was a whole new way of living. And it was that conscious decision to make Jesus their king, often in a world where it wasn't comfortable. And when we've put together the service for today, we're reading chapter 3, but I've missed out the last two verses. Not because I didn't want to cover them, but because I'm coming back in January, and that's the reading then, and I didn't want to like get carried away, talk about then, and realise in January I've already said everything I want to say. So we're covering verses 1 to 19 today, and I want to say there are three things in there that it helps us to realise about ourselves when we put Christ as our King. When we put Christ at the very top of our lives, at the centre of our lives. And the first of which is that when we put Christ in the centre of our lives, we are reminded that we are in God's story. Now, in that first bit, from sort of verses 2 to verse 6, we see Paul reminding us that God says he is showing himself to us. And there's a really powerful bit where basically he says, in the past, we've told you about God. We've taught you about God. But now this is new because we are showing you who God is in Jesus Christ. And we see that in verse 6, where it says, The mystery is that through the gospel, through the good news, the Gentiles are heirs with Israel, members of one body and sharers in the promise of Jesus. Because in Jesus, God says, do you know what? This is available for everyone. So back a year ago, no, back what, 6 months ago to the coronation, King Charles became king for us all. Whether we chose to say it or whatever, Charles became king. But we didn't all get invited. Now, bizarrely, somehow, my invitation got lost in the post. I didn't get that, no. I know, shocking. And whether or not we were invited to the ceremony or not, he still becomes our king. And it feels a bit like that for the people who were around before the time of Jesus, that they know that God is their king and they know that God's in charge, but they'd never really got to know him. They didn't get to take part. They knew about him, even if they didn't completely know who he was and know what he was like. But the Bible tells us, and we'll be hearing this over the course of Advent and Christmas over the coming weeks, that Advent and Christmas is when God reveals himself to us. Next week in Advent, there's that beautiful reading where it talks about the end of the season of darkness and the beginning of his glorious light. We are reminded in this passage that Jesus makes us part, an integral part of the story of God. He makes us that we are so involved that that story is as much our story as it is his, because he says you are now part of the family. We're no longer people watching on from the sidelines. We're not the people crowding the streets, gathering behind fences to watch the king go by. We are the ones like Zacchaeus who go from being spectators behind fences and up trees to invited to share dinner with him. That beautiful bit of Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, where John is writing to the churches of Asia, and he says, and he speaks in Jesus' words, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone would open the door, and if anyone would hear my voice, open the door and invite me in, then I will eat with him and he with me." We are not being invited to be spectators of the gospel, but participants. If we feel we're standing just watching from behind fences, then maybe we need to reassess how things are and we need to climb over and get involved. So this passage reminds us that we are part of God's story. But the great thing about being part of that story is the second thing it reminds us is that we are not alone. Now, bearing in mind, Paul, who wrote more of the New Testament than anybody else, says in verse 8, "Although I am less than the least of all of God's people, this grace was given to me to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ and to make plain to everyone the administration, the giving out of this mystery." So, Paul here is saying, do you know what? I'm not top of the line. If Paul was being recruited for a job to lead the church and he'd sent his CV to a recruitment agency, he wouldn't have even got the thanks but no thanks. He'd have got the sort of, he'd looked down, they'd have looked, you know, when you get that list of essentials, desirables and would-be nices. He wouldn't have even ticked the essentials. The whole persecuting and killing Christians would have probably ruled him out of the running quite early. Paul says, I am the least of all of these, and yet God has chosen me. And for us, no matter how we've messed up, no matter how inadequate we feel, no matter how we don't feel we fit in or have anything to offer, God says He has called us to be part of his plan. God has called us to have that role within what he is doing. So verse 8 that we just looked at, where it says, I am less than the least. He's not even saying I am the worst. He's saying I'm not even the worst. I've not even reached that level. And yet God has given me an amazing thing to do. And it is really easy to rule ourselves out of things based on inadequacies. It's really easy to rule ourselves out based on what we can't or what we think we can't do. But God does not look at our ability, but God looks at our availability. God looks at not whether what we've got in our hands to offer to him, but whether our hands are open to offer him all that we have. He says, are you saying to me, here I am, take what I have and use it? For Paul said, I will give what I have. Despite the fact that it meant running into the opposition of the people. If you just read through the book of Acts, you see that Paul, becoming a follower of Jesus, did not give him an easy life. But he made himself available to the will and purpose of God. And that's what Ephesians is about. Ephesians is about Paul saying, Christ is my king. Christ is the one who I will serve. Christ is the one who I will say yes to. And though I am less than the least, his grace was given to me. And today in this room, there is not one of us to whom God's grace is not given or is not available. There is not one of us who God says, yes, 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 no. And looks at us and says, we're just going to skip over you. For God's grace is made available to all. God's grace is offered to everyone. All we need to do is have a broken heart and a humble spirit to receive it. The only thing that can stop us receiving the fullness of grace is the pride of thinking we can do it ourselves. In Isaiah 59, just before Isaiah 60, when the whole tone of Isaiah changes in Isaiah 60, we've got those beautiful words where it says, arise and shine, for the light of the glory of the King is here upon us. And in Isaiah 59, just before that, just before we start to see that real hope repeated again and again, there is a letter to the people of Israel that says, you cannot save yourself. How do you think you can get yourself out of this mess? How do you think, when you look at that deep hole that you're in, you can dig yourself out with the spade you dug the hole with in the first place? Paul says, I am less than the least. And whether today you feel adequate or inadequate, whether you feel like what you've got to offer is something that can be used or something that is useless to everyone, God says, let me take that and let me turn it into something unbelievable. I've just remembered it's not 25 to. Because the third thing is, so remember that we are now part of that story of God. Remember that once we are in that story, we are never alone, because God is with us and he uses us. We're not being asked to make the way ourselves. God is with us and walks with us. And thirdly, we remember that once we serve Christ as our King, and once we put him in that place of kingship in our lives, and once we stir him through the whole of our life, we are more than we were before. I've got a friend at church back up in Blackburn. They've got a little daughter who's about 9, and she's a very keen dancer. And love them to bits, but very unfortunately, sometimes we have to go and watch them dance. And this is why I don't have children, because I'm not very good at looking interested. And I look and I'm going like, is she good? And I don't know. I really don't. But every so often she comes back and she's got her like dancing school outfit that she has more and more badges from things she's won over. She's got more badges than the Scout movement on there these days. But she constantly wants to tell me what those badges are for. And I tell her mum, I try to tell her, I don't understand the difference. I'm like, Megan, I don't know what modern is. I know what tap is. Tap's the thing with the loud shoes. I can do that. But then she talks about modern and freestyle and other words I've not even heard of. Is street dance just when it's on the street? Or is there something more specific about it? But she brings and shows me these badges that she's got for competing, for winning, for coming first and second. And do you know what? Each time she says, I'm getting better. And that's great. Because as she invests herself into it, she develops more skills. She becomes better at it. And there, with those badges, shows that she is capable of more and more. I am more than I was. And that's what God does with us. As we walk with him, as we grow with him in discipleship, as we become more mature as Christian disciples, we become more because we become more like Christ himself. We don't get badges. We don't get things to sew on our sleeves. We've just had a Cubs and Scouts group. It's hilarious now. Once a week I see Rebecca come back with her neckerchief, and I just can't get over that at all. But we don't get those marks that say this is absolutely what we've done. But we do have the evidence in the Christian maturity that we have of God saying, I am doing more, I am growing you in the likeness of Jesus. And in verse 16, it says, I pray that out of his glorious riches, because if you're going to ask somebody for something, if you're going to ask somebody to lend you a bit of money, don't ask somebody that's broke. Ask somebody that's got money. Because somebody that's broken can't give it to you. But out of God's glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your heart through faith. What that verse says, what verse 16 and then verse 17 says, is that God, who has so, so much, may give you more, because God is generous. And I said I'm not going to get on to verse 20 and 21 till January, but you can't help it, because when we're talking about the God who gives everything, we are talking about ascribing to God who is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine according to his power that is at work within us. I am more than I was because of he who is at work within me. We watched has anyone ever watched Love It or List It? No. It's basically a Kirsty and Phil, and you spend an hour deciding which of them annoy you the most. And they go into this house that's not working for a family, and they turn around, and one of them thinks, you need to find you somewhere better to move to. And the other one says, we can turn this house into something better. And the fact is that God does both of those things. God not only takes where we are now, but he makes it new. But he makes it more than it is right now. He restores it. Go back in the Isaiah, back from 60, back from 59, back one more chapter to chapter 58. We see that God is referred to as the restorer of broken homes, of broken down houses. You'll be called the restorer of streets and houses. Today, God, who says, I will make you more than you are, says, let me come into the very life that you are living. Let me make it new and let me make it more than it was. Let me help you realize that you can be more. You can grow. It doesn't matter where we are. Doesn't matter what state we're in at the moment. God has a vision of how we can be more than we are. And he needs us to say yes to him. God won't be like sort of the demolition teams that move in and we're all chained up around the outsides of our houses trying to keep the bulldozers away. God wants us to say yes, come in. Turn what is not perfect into what is incredible. And this Christmas, as we celebrate the word Emmanuel, as we celebrate God with us, let us rejoice in the God who changes the broken to the restored, the dark to the light, the fragile to the strong, the hopeless to the hopeful. Because God says, I will change and make you greater than you can imagine. All we need to do is submit ourselves to his plan. So, remember this today. To be fair, I'm going to give you those 3 points again. You'll go home and just remember the rant about Christmas puddings. And after 20 odd years of preaching, I've kind of made myself comfortable with that now. Remember, we're in God's story. Remember, we're never alone because of Jesus. And remember that when we submit to him, we are more than we were before, because he has made us new in the image and likeness of his Son. Let's pray.